Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Harney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. It's Friday the 21st of April. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Patricia Rickard-Clark. She's chairperson of Safeguarding Ireland. A dedicated support for vulnerable customers moving bank accounts will remain in place across retail banks ahead of the Ulster Bank closures today. That includes the branches in Naas, Newbridge, Maynooth and Blessington. We'll speak to David Hall, CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Services. Ambulance response times increased annually since 2019. Then Owen Beattie will be speaking to Johnny Bailey, committee member at Monasterevin and Fishertown Anglers Club. The club has just been set up, so we'll hear all about that. And then we'll speak to Adrian Weckler, technology editor with the Irish Independent. If you want to use someone's Netflix account or someone else's Netflix account, you're going to have to pay for it very soon. And Twitter has removed the blue tick. Many of you will know the blue tick that verifies users on the account. It's now gone, or if you want it, you'll have to pay for it. So if you want to get in touch with the show on anything that we'll speak about, 045 898 999. If you want to email me, it's studio@kfmradio.com, or of course you can send a text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, dedicated supports for vulnerable customers moving bank accounts will remain in place across retail banks ahead of Ulster Bank closures today. That takes place from 4:30. They'll shut their doors, and that's in Newbridge, Naas, Maynooth and Blessington. Now, I'm joined on the line by Patricia Rickard-Clark, who is the chairperson of Safeguarding Ireland. Good afternoon, Patricia.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Patricia, it's great that this is going to be kept open and there will still be, I suppose, lines of communication there for people who maybe, even though there has been many, many calls for people to get their things sorted before today, some people may have missed the boat.
Yes, indeed. And some people may be in difficulties, personal difficulties. Some people may have cognitive decline, may have had an bereavement, a family event, critical incidents that has prevented them from closing their account or were unable to do so. And when, Safeguarding Ireland has been working with, obviously, the Ulster Bank, who has responded well to questions we raised, and also working with the Banking and Payments Federation, who have their Vulnerable Customers Forum and have been enabling banks or informing banks how they should respond to people in difficult circumstances. So really, really important. What is important, if people have difficulties, is that they do contact the bank. Both Ulster Bank are remaining open in terms, as you say, support for people who need support, but also the other banks, and indeed on POSTA and the credit unions. Now, unfortunately, we do not have any adult safeguarding legislation. We haven't had a developed sort of system in retail banks or other financial institutions of assisting and supporting people. So that is what's very important. And with key to all of this, this exit of Ulster Bank and KBC Bank have raised issues of what supports are there for vulnerable people. And people who do need support. Again, when the closure was announced, the first piece of information that we got, if we wanted to switch accounts from the Ulster Bank, was to go digital, to go online. Many old people don't have access to digital, or they haven't used it. The other big problem that arose that has been highlighted, been looking at it for some time, is that you need to open an account in another bank or post office or whatever, is a passport or a driving license and a utility bill to prove it less. Now, again, if you're in residential care or whatever, or you're old, you may not have a current passport or driving license. And the difficulty has arisen. We're only one of three European countries that don't have a public identity card. And our public service card, which many people have, people with a disability or older people would have state pension, would have that public service card. But it cannot be used in these circumstances, because we have, again, social welfare legislation, which said it can only be used by public bodies. So all of these difficulties have arisen and have not assisted people to enable them to quickly switch. Also, the switching code that we have by central bank is quite limited. And again, one of the recommendations of the retail bank report was that the central bank look at the switching code and ensure that it's in compliance with the payments account directives. So that enables, again, an easy transfer of credit and debit payments. And as we all know, having delay in standing orders for insurance, rent, care payments for care, for maintenance and care in residential care, that gives rise to huge difficulties for people. And some people, it may have impact on the credit rating. So a lot of issues have been highlighted as a result of this particular event.
Okay.
And particularly for, as I say, people who need support.
Absolutely. Patricia, if you wouldn't mind just moving around slightly, you're breaking up a small bit there. But just in relation to, you know, moving accounts, and like you were saying there, you know, the need for a passport, driver's license, and those kind of things, which, you know, some people, especially the older cohort, maybe might not have that. I remember when I moved back from the US and my bank was still, you know, everything was still working. I had an online bank account or whatever, and I was just trying to get a new card. And yes. Because I didn't have an up-to-date, you know,
utility
something.
Bill or whatever.
Yes, I couldn't get it. It literally took me months. And I kept going in saying, listen, you know, I literally just moved back from America. I don't have anything in my name. Oh, sorry, there's nothing we can do. And like, you know, it's very frustrating for people when you're being met with these hurdles, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, for people who are, you know, in personal difficulty or old and frail, not used to dealing with this, it adds stress that is unnecessary. And why can't we use our public service card for that if we proffer it to identify ourselves or whatever? Now, the banks, in fairness to the banks, they have been working around that, and Banking and Payments Federation have been encouraging banks to work around that. But there are risks to that as well, if there isn't a proper recognised framework. And many of us have a public service card that's clearly with our identity and whatever. So, as I say, the system, or the banking, the financial system to date has not been up to date with actually supports for people that need that additional support. Now, the central bank currently is reviewing its consumer protection code, and these are the issues we should all be raising with it. But the central bank needs to show leadership to deal with this. Also, it's tied in to our assisted decision-making capacity legislation, which is about to commence next week, which has arrangements, different types of arrangements, depending on our ability to make a decision, to assist us to appoint another person to assist us to get information, to make decisions, to sign documents and that. So really, really important issues that we haven't really paid enough attention to for people who need support.
Absolutely. I know you said there that the central bank need to show leadership. Has there been anything said, Patricia, that, you know, a public identity card will be, you know, verified in the future and will be able to be used to set up a bank account?
Well, Safeguarding Ireland has been in touch with both the Department of Finance and the Department of Social Protection, and we've also raised it with the Department of Finance in looking at, as I say, producing their retail bank report, and we have made a number of submissions to the central bank on that issue. So again, it's something that really needs to be addressed, but again, the code in the central bank, the new code, should look at all of these issues and have a framework for dealing with them and not leave people in very, very difficult circumstances without support.
Definitely, it's something that needs to be looked at. If there's people listening in right now, Patricia, and maybe they haven't moved for a variety of reasons, and like you said earlier, you know, things can happen in life that we can't, you know, foresee, and things can fall to the wayside naturally. Where should people reach out to for support?
Well, their own bank or post office or credit union. Now, post office and credit union aren't developed and they work more independently, if you like. But AIB, Bank of Ireland, Permanent TB are the three remaining banks, and I can call out numbers. So AIB is 0818 227 056. Bank of Ireland is 1-800-946-146, and Permanent TSB 0818-818-721. And indeed, Ulster Bank, which is still going to remain to give that support, is 1-800-656-001. But anyway, contact any of the banks and look for help, and look for the vulnerable customers unit. All of those banks have vulnerable customers units that should be able to help them.
Okay, that's very good information there, so that, you know, the banks are there to help and they do have a vulnerable customer unit that will be able to help those people who maybe need an extra little leg up. That is Patricia Rickard-Clark, Chairperson of Safeguarding Ireland. Thanks very much, Patricia, for your time. Now, just in case you missed that number, the helpline number for the Ulster Bank, of course, closing today at 4:30, especially here in around the local area in Naas, Newbridge, Maynooth and Blessington. This is the dedicated helpline number, so grab your pens there quickly. It's 1-800-656-001. That's 1-800-656-001. And as Patricia was just saying before the song, every single bank has a vulnerable customer unit. So if you are struggling maybe to get your affairs in order or to switch, not even just in Ulster Bank, but among any of the banks, there are dedicated people working within the bank that are able to help you. And as Patricia was saying, it is actually really difficult to get things sorted, especially with the move to most things online now, if you're not too au fait. And you'd be surprised that not everyone is so au fait. To be honest with you, I wouldn't be that great with online myself. I'm a bit of an old school person. I do like to do things sending in applications and paper and all this kind of thing. But look, we'll try and make the move. Now, something I'm reading here, and it's not that surprising if you've ever been over to the US or if you've spent any time in California especially, but Americans spent more money on legal marijuana than chocolate last year. Sales of weed hit $30 billion in 2022, topping chocolate's $18 billion. Marijuana is currently legal in 21 states and is legal for medicinal use in an additional 17 states. And this is according to a report by MJ Biz Daily, which predicts marijuana spending in the US will hit $56 billion by 2028. I know, a controversial topic here, but very interesting that more is spent on weed than marijuana. Now, on to the life-saving pets, because yesterday I was talking to you about a dog who chewed off his owner's toe, and then it subsequently found out that he had no feeling in his leg, and he could have lost his full leg if his dog hadn't chewed his toe. But today, there's a cat who saved its diabetic owner's life, which is among the finalists at the National Cat Awards. Amanda Jemison, 51, from Liverpool, lost consciousness after going to bed one night with dangerously low blood sugar. Willow the cat bit the leg of Miss Jemison's partner, Ray Sherwood, who was 57. He had fallen asleep in front of the television and paced around to wake him up. Willow then led Mr. Sherwood upstairs, where he found Amanda unresponsive and called for an ambulance. So Mr. Sherwood said, "I had fallen asleep in front of the TV, and then at around 4 a.m. I was woken by Willow biting at my legs and jumping at me. It was very out of character for her and made me get up to see what the fuss was about. She was running between me and the stairs looking back at me. I followed her up the stairs and she kept looking back at me to make sure I was coming. When I went into the bedroom, Willow leapt onto the bed and I could see Amanda slumped over. She was unresponsive and I called for an ambulance straight away." And there's a lovely picture here of Willow and Amanda Jemison. And Mr. Sherwood, Amanda's husband, went on to say she was very unwell. She was rushed to hospital, where fortunately they were able to treat her. A good news story there. And Willow the cat is up for an award there now. Who knew there was a cat award? Cats sometimes can get a bad rap, and I have to say, I wouldn't be the biggest fan of cats. But look, clearly they do know what's going on, because sometimes people say, well, cats, you know, they don't care about owners. Or you've often heard that thing, probably, they say, if you die, that a dog will, you know, look for someone and a cat will apparently eat you. Like that's what I was told. This is probably not true, but I've heard that if you died in the house, then a cat would probably just go for you. Clearly not from this here, but look, let me know what you think. 0833 97 97 97. Are you a cat or a dog person? Coming up after the break, we'll be speaking to David Hall, CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Services, about the response times increasing since 2019. Don't go away.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, new figures obtained from the National Ambulance Service show that the average response time by ambulances for Category 1 life-threatening cases across the country has increased year on year since 2019. Last year, it stood at 26 minutes. These figures were obtained by AIM2 leader Padraig Tobin under a set of parliamentary questions. I'm joined now on the line by David Hall. He's CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Services. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Not good news, I suppose, really, for the people of Kildare, that if you were in a life-threatening situation, that you might have to wait 26 minutes, David.
No, and unfortunately, it's a number of interviews I would have done with yourself and your colleagues over the last number of years could probably just be replayed, Caoimhe. And the same questions and answers probably given. So, no, it's a very serious situation. These are the Category 1 patients who have got life-threatening conditions where you really rely and depend upon the ambulance service. That's what your ambulance service is there for, is to be able to respond. And it's deeply frustrating for patients, for families, and indeed for the National Ambulance Service staff themselves, because the National Ambulance Service has been a stalwart in the health service, and the staff, as I've said on multiple occasions, are probably the best ambulance staff in the world. But unfortunately, they've been neglected on a whole host of fronts, including resources, pay, conditions and structure for the last 10 years. And now we've got emergency departments jammed full of patients and an incredible pressure on emergency department staff as well, where ambulances are not being released back on, to be available for emergency calls. So a combination of things, but ultimately this combination of factors has arisen. And the excuse that was used during COVID was there was a COVID-related issue. So we had the excuse, every excuse in the book was used, and COVID came along giving the HSE the excuse that it was relevant to COVID. COVID's now passed, and everything is under immense pressure still, and nothing's changed, and people are in danger, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. And like you said there, it's unfortunate that we actually really could replay some of the interviews we've done with you over the years, and it would be the same situation. And I think really, David, it's very hard for people to comprehend how, you know, let's say for even someone like me, I live about 5 minutes from Naas Hospital. It would be very hard to understand how, if I was in a life-threatening situation, that I, you know, might not be brought there for, it might take a half an hour for someone to come out to me. Can you explain that to people who just can't wrap their head around it? Because I really don't understand it either, to be honest.
Yeah, I think when an emergency call is made to the National Ambulance Service, there is a system of prioritisation done by highly trained call takers and dispatchers who determine, based on the information being given, where you fall in the categorisation of an emergency. And in this category we're talking about, this is the highest level, which is a cardiac arrest or stroke, or someone's unconscious and not breathing. And the nearest ambulance is dispatched. But, well, unfortunately, if another two ambulances in the area are already in Naas Hospital trying to unload patients or trying to leave patients there, they're in a queue for admission. And or indeed, they may have gone to Tala Hospital with a patient and are waiting to unload the patient there as well. And the dispatchers have no idea, no understanding how long it'll take for that ambulance to be released back again. I think one of the features, there was another question asked a number of weeks ago in relation to how many patients were left waiting over 30 minutes in an emergency department before they were handed over by the ambulance service. And the number was very, very high. And, you know, in this FOI that Paddy Tobin has asked for, the number is still high for over an hour of people being waiting. And indeed, I think the highest was 22 hours waiting for an ambulance, and indeed 13. There's also a very concerning statistic given in the FOI information of significant number of patients who unfortunately had deceased when the ambulance arrived on scene. So there's a whole host of information in the FOI. It's very concerning. Unfortunately, it wouldn't give you much confidence, in relation to the ability to guarantee an appropriate, fast effective response in circumstances where you are in a very serious condition. And I think the minister now needs to probably take control of the situation, because this is where our primary frontline engagement, and give the staff and patients the due respect they deserve to have a look at all the factors that have been in existence now for years and years and years. And it's actually getting a bit tedious and boring, only it's so serious. The same excuse has been given, same issues still arise. And now, when problems stay the same, Caoimhe, that's one thing. When things get a bit worse, serious questions arise in relation to the ability to control and manage an ambulance service in circumstances where the situation gets worse and doesn't stabilise. Because these are lives, these are humans, these are people in distress in the most difficult time of their lives where they're looking for help and looking for assistance. The worst part is that there's a hugely frustrated crew of ambulance staff, many friends and colleagues of mine around the country who, you know, are unhappy about this and very distressed and having to try and come to somebody who's already sick in difficult circumstances, in traumatic circumstances, a bit late arriving and causing greater difficulty and distress to everybody and potentially worsening the outcome for them clinically. So I think it's time to stop the talking and the FOIs keep coming and no one seems to get a bit embarrassed by decreasing response times.
Yeah, absolutely. Serious action needs to be taken. I know it was in the Western region last year, but like you said, one person waiting 22 hours for an ambulance. David, we've spoken before, like you said, and you have your own ambulance service over there, Lifeline Ambulance in Leixlip. And you've told me before that you've never once responded to an ambulance call within Kildare.
No, we've been there 21 years and the National Ambulance Service holds all of the emergency calls themselves. During the winter plan, we have had 8 ambulances a day in various parts of the country working for the National Ambulance Service, moving routine patients in and out of hospitals and to and from nursing homes. But for the emergency calls, the 999 calls, the National Ambulance Service responds to those themselves and does not pass them on. So you could have a situation where I could have an ambulance within 5 minutes of you, Caoimhe, and you could be near an ACE hospital and could be collapsed, or indeed today outside the Mater Hospital, I have 4 ambulances parked and somebody within 100, 200, 300, 400 metres could collapse with a heart attack there, and the HSC of the Dublin Fire Brigade would dispatch the nearest ambulance of theirs to that scene. So serious questions arise and these are humans. I'm biased. I run and own a private ambulance company. I make no apologies for that. It's the second largest ambulance service in the state. I move 20,000 patients a year, have 170 staff and 50 ambulances. And as I say, that's my business. I make no apologies for it. I do believe there's some radical changes should be and could be made within the ambulance service, leaving me aside and any biases I might have from a commercial perspective. But there are many changes could be made to improve situations and to save lives. And when that's not first and foremost, you have to be concerned.
Yeah, I appreciate, you know, you're saying you have a level of bias, which fair play for saying that, David. But, you know, have you ever has there ever been much consultation or has there been any conversations with private ambulance services and, you know, the public in terms of, you know, well, look, lads, we're here, we're available and we, you know, why don't you bring us into the loop and we can make these calls for you?
Yeah, I'd even go a step further and to say that, you know, in circumstances where an emergency or national emergency arises, let's say a plane crash, a train crash, a bus crash, my company and the private ambulance companies aren't included in the emergency plan.
Okay.
When the fire happened to Wexford Hospital, it was the hospital group that contacted me to look for assistance, not the emergency plan. So, you know, does that mean when there's a plane crash at Dublin Airport, that's the Dublin Airport Authority or Aer Lingus or Ryanair need to ring me? So, as I say, you know, these are lives, these are people, these are citizens, and there should be no variation in relation to any egos, any territory, any territorial issues, or any controlling issues, or any influences by any third parties in relation to protecting the public. And all of those barriers should be removed in order to ensure they're done. And by the way, from the emergency stuff in relation to responding, such as the fire at Wexford Hospital, like my company didn't charge for any response there, and we sent 12 ambulances down that night. And in relation to our proposals for emergency plans, in circumstances where there's a national emergency declared, there is no commercial charge by my company for that. So this is a very basic, elementary protection that should be there. And I've got the exact same license, the exact same insurance, the exact same accreditation, and the exact same regulation as the HSC has. And indeed, my own company got our own report from the regulator only in the last 2 weeks, which we're publishing soon, which came in at 98% approval, which probably is one of the highest, if not the highest in the country. So there's no excuses. This is purely a territorial, egotistical
and shameful debacle where the patient is not being put first, which is the most core elementary component of our health service.
Absolutely. I have one message in here before I let you go, David. Hi, Caoimhe. Even classed as urgent Ava when in an active seizure, Ava's daughter. Ava, when in active seizure, has never got an ambulance in less than 25 minutes living in Kildare. The average time for us when she was in an active seizure, as in actually physically in seizure, is 40 minutes. We have had to wait up to 90 minutes in the past. This is not highlighted enough. There is a major crisis within the ambulance service, and that comes in from Sam Kenny. And thank you very much, Sam. David, I suppose, echoes exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, like, it just needs to be dealt with properly and appropriately. And, like, there are short resources. There's the delays in the emergency departments. Like, you know, we suggested before, maybe there's temporary holding areas outside the emergency departments where, other staff could take charge of patients while waiting to do a handover there for releasing the ambulance, especially if all of your ambulances in an area are being delayed. There has to be some semblance of communication there today. I've got three ambulances in an area. Two of them are now in hospital. I have a third one going in. And if another emergency call comes in, I've got no idea when one of my three ambulances is going to be released. So surely there's a mechanism there for emergency medical technician staff or someone to take over patient care outside the hospital in a tented area in circumstances where there are no other emergency ambulances in the area. So we need to be a little bit cleverer than we are. And this is all with one simple objective, which is to save and preserve life.
Absolutely. David Hall, CEO of Lifeline Ambulance Services. Thanks very much, David, for joining us.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now we're going to go over to Owen Beattie, who's standing by. And listen up if you're into the fishing, because he has lots of details for you.
Okay, thanks, Caoimhe. Joining me on the line now is Johnny Bailey. He is a committee member of the Monastrevan and Fisherstown Match Anglers Club, which has reset itself up, I guess you could say. Johnny, good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
No problem, Owen. Good afternoon.
So, I say reset up. This club was in existence previously, then maybe people lost interest in it a little bit, and yourself and some of the other committee members now down in the Monastrevan area trying to revive it.
Yeah, we're trying to get it back up and running, and it's going the right way anyway. The club used to have a lot of members a good few years ago, but it's 15 years since they had a proper match on it, you know, and this Sunday will be our first match in 15 years, so a lot of hard work went into it, and I think we have 60 members there now at the minute, and I think we have about 30 lads fishing Sunday, so it's looking well, and the club is going in the right direction, you know.
When you say a fishing match or an angling match, what does that mean, or how does it work?
We organise a place to meet, so we're going to meet in Monastrevan in the Venice of Ireland Tavern there in the main street in Monastrevan. We're going to have breakfast around 8:30, and then we'll see how many turn up basically, and we'll get the numbers together, and the amount of numbers we have is the amount of pegs we'll put in on the canal. So you pay your €20 to fish the match, and you put your hand in the bag and pick out your number, and basically that's where you're going to fish for 5 hours. So it's not rocket science. There's a lot of people love fishing, and it's great to see everyone back, and we're getting good support, and a couple of counsellors working on it there, Pascal McHugh's working on it, and people are trying to get behind us and get the club going back in the right direction, you know.
Right, so it's canal fishing, is it? And what are the rules? What's the bait, and what are you fishing for?
It's canal fishing, yeah. We'll be fishing for... The canal holds a lot of different species, so you're talking rudd, roach, hybrids, bream, tench, perch. Bonus fish is probably tench and bream, you know. Everyone has a chance. If you sit down, the end peg is obviously the best peg to get. It'll be the last person sitting down. So if you're down on the left, you have all the fish on your left coming towards you, so you can catch a lot more fish usually than the lads in the middle of you. Do you know what I mean? Rules will be... It'd be the National Coarse Fishing Federation of Ireland, so it'd be the NCFFI, basically. We'd be abiding by their rules, and it's basically anyone that wants to look up the rules, it's an easy Google there, do you know?
Right, it's something that I have a personal interest in. I'm a keen fisherman, and I like pike fishing, you know, sometimes fly fishing on the Liffey, and course fishing on the canal as well. And it's something that I got back into during COVID, because it was something that you could go and do, clear the head, and you could do on your own. Do you think maybe people have started to get back into it now over the last few years?
Yeah, I think they have. And I think a lot of people just like to get out and go and switch off. You know, fishing is very, very competitive, but then again, it can be so relaxing. And people go, if they don't catch, a lot of people don't care. I often go, and a lot of lads often go, and we just blank it, and we don't really care. But then I do a lot of match fishing, basically, where I'm competing all the time. So I love that end of it. It keeps me on the edge and keeps me fishing well and competing, you know. I know you do a bit of pike angling and that, and like you're probably on the barrow there in Munster Evan, so we wouldn't be fishing the barrow. We'd be mainly just on the canal, you know.
Right, and talk to me then about the bait. Will it be maggots, worms that you'd be using?
Yeah, well, it'd be competition rules, so we'll fall in line with the NCFFI rules. So it'd be no joker or a bloodworm, so they won't be allowed. But it'd be basically maggots, worms, ground bait, casters, pinkies, squash, so whatever you can get your hands on basically on the day, but mostly maggots and casters and ground bait.
Okay, so this event is taking place on Sunday, but again, we're chatting to you just to kind of raise awareness that the club has set back up now in Monastrevan and the Fisherstown area. So there'll be a number of matches, I'm sure, coming down the line. And how can people join the club or keep in touch with yourselves?
Yeah, like you can find the club on Facebook. So it's the Monastrevan and Fisherstown Match Anglers Club. So MFMA for short. So you can find us on Facebook, and you can pay a membership through Facebook. You can contact Alan on Facebook. He's the secretary. Jim Delaney's the chairman, and Manny's the treasurer. So you can contact either of them through Facebook. You can do Revolut or PayPal. It's only €20. It's not a whole lot of money, and we're trying to get a bit of sponsorship. So I'd just like to thank John and Finlay there in Munstrevan for sponsoring a couple of matches, and Ready to Drive Signs is sponsoring us, and then Floods Feed and Uber is going to sponsor us. And just like to say thanks to Always Ireland for actually giving us permission to do this. So they're backing us all the way. Everywhere is tidied up and clean. We spent a lot of time down cleaning swims and pegging out areas where people are going to fish. A lot of hard work went into it, and a lot of paperwork went into it before anyone even was a member, because everything has to be above board now before you have a match, signage and insurance. So all members pay their €20, and they will be covered then under public liability insurance through your membership, you know what I mean? And so going forward then, we'd really like to promote the junior and youth anglers. So we'd like to promote and try and get youths and juniors back into fishing and just teach them a lot. And there's a lot of good competitions for youths and juniors now, fishing for Ireland and going abroad and, you know, things like that. So hopefully we can get going and get a few more members and keep the club going.
Well, listen, Johnny, well done to you and all the committee members there for setting up the club again, and best of luck for the upcoming season and tight lines, as they say.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Owen.
Thanks for joining us. That's Johnny Bailey, committee member of the Monastrevan and Fisherstown Anglers Club.
And thanks very much to Owen Beattie for that one. I'm sure it'll be great when they have all their new members in the Anglers Club in Monastrevan. Now, changing tack slightly, because many of you will have heard that Twitter has removed the blue tick from their accounts. So now the blue check mark, well, they haven't removed it, but they've removed it from a number of people, because the blue check mark now indicates a paying customer rather than authenticated individuals, while grey ticks indicate government ties. I'm joined now on the line by Adrian Weckler, Technology Editor with the Irish Independent. Good afternoon, Adrian.
Good afternoon.
Adrian, to be honest, a little bit worrying, this whole mix-up now, because I'm just wondering, as a journalist, like, how do you even know if anyone is real or fake anymore?
Well, I mean, that's the main point. What Elon Musk and Twitter were hoping was that journalists and news organisations would all rush to pay their $8 a month for individual blue check marks, the same as anyone else. But almost nobody is willing to do that. I'm certainly not willing to do that. I mean, I was verified with a blue check mark for several years. And my perspective on it is that it was similar to many other journalists, maybe yourself included, which is that the verification of me or anybody else or the Irish Independent or any newspaper or media organization or KFM is really in Twitter's interest, because that indicates to people who use Twitter that the account or the organization or the institution is who they say they are. Mm. It's not up to us to pay to achieve that. It's up to them to establish that for the benefit of their users, of Twitter's users. In other words, the media and journalists and newsmakers are actually more valuable to Twitter than Twitter is to us. Now, don't get me wrong, I use Twitter every day. Mm. I do find it a valuable tool, both for gathering and for distributing news. But I could certainly live without it, if push comes to shove, and there's no way that I'm going to pay the $8 per month.
Absolutely. I appreciate you thinking that I have a blue tick. I absolutely don't, Adrian. But I'm sure it must be annoying.
You could have now. That's the point.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll pay the €8. But that's the point, though. Like, so let's say Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Who's going to say, like, that I'm not Kim Kardashian if I go and say I want to pay €8 to be Kim Kardashian?
Yeah.
On that specific example
you raised, if you pay your €8 and you say you're Kim Kardashian, they will do some basic checks to see whether your name is Kim Kardashian. Now, maybe your name is Kim Kardashian. Maybe you're trying to register the name Kim Kardashian, 73 or something like that. If your name happens to be Kim Kardashian and you can, provide your telephone number and your email or whatever, they will give you Kim Kardashian 73 as a verified account. Now, presumably Kim Kardashian herself, who has, 100 million followers or something, even if she doesn't sign up to the blue tick, she will, that account will survive, and probably most people will realize they'll probably go to look to the follower account now to decide who's authentic and who's not. Problem is, you can buy followers.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying earlier. Like, you know, someone was saying, oh, well, you can look at how many followers someone has. But like you were saying, like, you can buy followers.
You can buy followers. I mean, if I was to be very, very cynical about this, from an old legacy mainstream media point of view, this is not a bad thing, because services like Twitter have been responsible, in an inevitable, logical way, for taking an awful lot of news attention away from news websites and radio stations. And they're, like, at a stroke, Elon Musk has made Twitter less credible. And so if people are less likely to go to Twitter first for breaking news, which has sort of been the case for the last few years, Twitter has been the place where you sort of automatically go, if something is happening right now, okay, you might check a news site like CNN or BBC or even RT, the Irish Independent or whatever, but you'll also probably, a lot of people will just check Twitter. Mm. Now, you'd be a little bit less likely to do so, because you're going to see a whole lot of accounts who aren't verified. It could be any Joe Soap claiming some rumor, and there's so much nonsense on Twitter. So it is a huge problem.
Do you think then, like you're saying there, you think it might actually be beneficial for the likes of, KFM or any of the rest of us?
I think it will, because ultimately, like, we don't have the same technology capabilities as Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or WhatsApp or TikTok or any of those. None of us in the legacy media do. You might argue that someone like the New York Times, who spend hundreds of millions on it per year, maybe they do, but the vast majority of us don't. So we haven't really been able to compete. But what we do now have is a reputation to defend. Now, some people don't like individual media brands, and that's absolutely fine. But by and large, I think most people would agree that media companies in general, you have a decent sense of who they are and what they stand for, and they can be contacted. So, like, if I write an article in the Irish Independent, you're pretty sure that I have to stand over that article in the Irish Independent. I am who I say I am, and the Irish Independent is who it says it is. And that now has a slightly higher currency than it did a few weeks ago, because beforehand, it mightn't have mattered because I was verified on Twitter. So you just take my word for it that I was tweeting something. Yeah, I saw such and such was tweeting about this. Did you see what happened? I saw it happen. Now, if something happens and your friend says to you, did you see what happens? I saw it on Twitter. You might say, yeah, I know. I saw it on Twitter. Did you see it on 8chan and Reddit as well? Is that reliable? Yeah, I don't really believe that. Like, it could descend into the realm of those sort of fake WhatsApp sort of rumors that you see sometimes circulating.
Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, like, maybe all of our the media outlets within this country anyway might benefit. Do you think, like, in the case of, certain celebrities like, Bill Gates, Kim Kardashian, the Pope, I know, has lost his blue tick.
Yeah.
Do you think anyone is going to buy into it? Like, these people have so much money. Surely they're going to pay for it. Like, €8 isn't... No.
No, but why would they, though?
I suppose, yeah.
So look, there are a small number of people who, they call them legacy checkmark, legacy verified accounts, and there's a small number of those who will pay. Now, the vast majority of that small number of people who will pay are people who feel they need to pay. Now, if you stay on the subject of journalists, for example, you might be talking about, say, freelance journalists who are scrapping, say, for jobs or gigs, okay? Now, they might feel that if there's any chance that this will amplify their tweet or their message or get it to a broader audience, that it might be worth investing the €8 to do that. But the vast majority of people who will pay for it, they're literally paying for attention. So you would have seen, for example, a number of entrepreneurs who used to have a blue check mark for whatever reason. Some of them might now pay for that because they're literally trying to drum up business. It's like taking an ad, okay? So that's fine, and, you know, I wouldn't judge somebody for that, but I wouldn't mix that up with somebody who is a genuine celebrity or who is a genuine newsmaker who's more important to Twitter, to being, you know, to Twitter and Twitter users being there. Like, if Kim Kardashian left Twitter, that's probably, I would say, more damaging to Twitter than to Kim Kardashian. You might say, well, Kim Kardashian, the reason that she makes money from her brand sponsorship deals is because she has social media reach. That's true. But the reason that a lot of people use Twitter is because, say, Kim Kardashian is there, right? Mm. So it's a two-way street. And what Twitter is kind of saying is that it's gambling that celebrities and newsmakers need Twitter more than Twitter needs them. I don't think that's correct, but we'll see. I mean, we'll soon see. In a year's time, if we have this conversation, it'd be interesting to see how many blue ticks there are.
Very interesting. To be continued. That's Adrian Wechter there, technology editor with the Irish Independent. Thanks very much, Adrian. That's all we have time for today. I'll be back at the same time, not tomorrow, Monday, because I always do that. I'll be back the same time on Monday between 2 and 3.